No, he didn't have any long hair. He had just a nice forehead and all that. He didn't have long hair. But I remember that he had a pigtail, you see, with a bow tied round. I said, how did you know that? He says, what happened is that when he came and approached, he bent down to me. And he did like this to me. So there was another person who was by his side on whom he rested, said, Baba, that's how I came to know that he's Baba. Said, Baba is hungry. Baba wants food. So I, all of a sudden, you see, was so happy from the very beginning, you see, got back my senses and said, yes, I must receive Baba and give him something. So I started getting up. In the meantime, he turned, and while I get up, I see his hair that is there, and what a neck, and I could see his whole body through that dress. And he gradually passed away at a distance, and he faded away. And the light remained for some time, and then I again became as I am. But that joy, that vision that I have had, that sight is still with me, and I am satisfied. Was it Baba? I said, yes, you're right. So they revere her then. So this man who had heard the story comes to embrace me, that the description was yours. So that's how he came to know, you see. And he was happy. So that's what I say, that he has already started this. Same thing happened in Australia, you must have heard, through Bill. No. Joan Bruford saw it. She is not a woman, you see, who is so sentimental or emotional like that. She is very tough lady, you see. Joan Bruford, yeah. So then Baba dropped the body, you see. She felt very, very upset, you see, and sad. I don't know, I can't recount her feelings, you see. Each one has his own or her own personal feelings. But she must have felt something. So the story that we hear from that side, you see, from Australia, and confirmed by Bill when he came recently, was that, well, in all her thoughts, she is leading a dedicated life. She lives there for Baba now, in Australia. So in the morning she goes with a basket of grain to feed her chooks, the chickens, you know, and from a distance, you see, what she sees is Baba standing there. Her all thoughts are there on Baba, you see, and there she is, sees him. And she finds him in the same dress that she had seen him, you see, in the pink coat, sadra, and standing there, reclining against a tree. And she goes there to catch hold of him, you see. And just then, a kookaburra, you know the Australian bird? Yeah. It has a peculiar cackle, you see, it just laughs like a human being. So she was distracted, and then Baba was no more there. But she swears that she has seen him physically. And she says that if ever he would come again, nothing on earth can distract me now. Yeah. And the next day again he appears in his traditional blue coat now this time, which she had also seen him there. And he was again there, you see, the same way. And the next, that day, I don't know what happened to her. I was told, or I remember that, I'm not sure of that, that she got tripped or something happened, you see. And then again, just a very short distance, and she couldn't touch him, that's all. But the two sights that she has had is confirmed by the people, you see. Huh? She showed you the place. There you are, Rana says she showed the places, yeah. And the same thing happened with my cousin in Pune. Did you go to Pune? You were there in Pune?
Not this time,
yeah. No. When did you?
69.
Yeah. So there, my cousin, you see, she is absolutely helpless. She,
oh, yes, I've heard of
her. She was there in Pune. She is now in Ahmednagar. So her sister was there at the time of Amartiti. And she can't be brought in the crowd. She can't lift a finger, you see. She can't lift an eyelash, you may call it. She's so helpless. She's young, very energetic, that her mind is very active. She controls the household and all, just sitting there or lying flat. Yeah. Even her hands are to be lifted, you see. She can write letters, but absolutely helpless. If a fly sits there on a toe, she can't. Anywhere a mosquito stings, she can't drive away the mosquito that is there. Absolutely helpless. She's a yogi of the first degree, you see, I should say, to bear all this silently but with cheer. So, well, it so happened that at the Amartiti she couldn't be brought there. And she missed all that, you see. And she was very close to Baba. Here so often she has been brought and her whole body would be just lifted and placed across Baba's lap there, you see. And Baba would caress her face and embrace her and all that, you see. She's a woman, you see. Sheer helpless because of physical disability. So she lives a dedicated life remembering Baba all the time, and she missed Baba's presence. And well, whole household goes on 31st January to Mehrabad. She's left all alone. So her sister volunteered to stay there, offered to stay there. It's just the same for her, she said. So they've started following the same program that would be there at Mehrabad. And the time came for 12 o'clock, silence, from 12 to 12:15. The time in between Baba dropped the body, you see. There's complete silence. So they also observed silence. Soon after they started observing the silence, in walks Baba. This is what the sister sees, mind you. She heard the steps too, that's what Rano says, outside, you know, at our place there, Bindra House, there's the steps there. So she feels that somebody has come now that she has observed silence, and well, for 15 minutes they have to observe silence. They were spellbound. So Dhan, who is the disabled lady, you see, just she has shut her eyes and she has bent down her head, sits there at the dining table on a chair, and keeps quiet and with her eyes shut. Whereas by her side is her sister Roshan. Her eyes are open. She sees Baba entering the room and taking a round and going towards Dhan. In between herself and her sister, Baba stands there and he puts his arm around Dhan's shoulder, you see. And he stands, waits there. While they are so spellbound with the silence, self-imposed silence, that this woman cannot even utter a cry or welcome Baba. This girl who has seen Roshan, whereas this one is so absorbed in Baba thought, you see, and Baba has his arm around her. So when after some minutes, Baba leaves her. He sees her also and he leaves. And she does not know what to do, you see. No sooner the silence period is over. Silence had taken the first place, you see, a place of importance than Baba's physical appearance. That is how mind is. So she shouts out to Dhan, her sister, said, "Dhana, did you see Baba? Did you feel Baba? He was having his arm round your neck." She says, "Why didn't you tell me? She says, "I was feeling so absorbed and so blissful. This time my Amartiti was so fine, you see. I could feel that." So then she narrated the whole incident. She says, "Why didn't you tell me?" She said, "I couldn't. But her Dhan was just like this, you know, as her usual this. But paralyzed. Paralyzed. Of course, she could have got up and clung to Baba, you see.
Yeah. Baba would have managed
if she'd
done that.
No. Why, if you want, you can.
Unless. Like Job, the one to reach Baba, and just before she reached him, touched him,
and even Thomas wouldn't have been able to touch him had he not ordered him to put his finger there.
But she could have at least sort of, you know, by doing like this.
Well, everything we can say it afterwards, you see.
Right, I'm just quick enough on the uptake to realize what the emotion was meaning then.
And we hear stories from the West too. You all bring some stories which are very heartwarming about Baba's physical presence. And we have been hearing of Mr. Luck, you see, Morris Luck, having seen Baba on the balcony, having seen him twice or something like that, you see. You know that, how he is, what are his feelings for Baba, you know?
Oh, the Luck brothers.
Yeah. And Baba condescends to give him.
He calls Baba his friend.
Yes,
right.
His friend.
He probably has spent more time thinking about Baba than practically anybody here in the West. Poor Mr. Luck.
So he was lucky too.
Yeah.
And he casually reports to people, well, what's there in that? You see, I've seen him twice here, said, standing on the balcony. You see. I know he spoke with me. He's a good man, I tell you. Francis, Colonel Francis, retired now. He was in charge of the Faroe Islands during the war. And his wife were here at Mehrazad for some days, some weeks. So one day there was a program at Mehrabad. So Baba told them to go to Mehrabad and be there and witness the things that happened there. So, well, one of the items was that Baba had to wash the feet of the poor who were invited by Baba, and Baba was giving them some grain or money or whatever it was, I don't remember now. So naturally Frances Goldney loved Baba very much, and this lady, her name is Ola, she's still alive, very old. She had just heard of Baba from Francis, and, she is younger than Goldney, but now they are old. So while Francis was explaining to Ola what was happening and all that, so she interjected and said, yes, I understand, he's a good man, in whispers. And from a distance, Baba turns to her and said, in gestures, not a good man, but God-man.
The last time she came to him,
One day, Baba just put a question to all the mandali that were sitting inside the hall here and said that, why is it that people, when they are angry, they shout at one another? Someone gave an explanation, and somebody else gave another explanation, and so forth, you see. Then Baba put counter questions and all that, and there was no satisfactory reply in the end. All felt that the replies given were not at all satisfactory. Well, somebody said, as for instance, you lose your temper, you see, Baba, and then you just shout, you don't know what you do, you see. And then somebody else said that, well, the person, you see, just, he has no control over himself and he shouts. And likewise, you see, very childish replies, you see. Naturally, in front of the God-man, when he puts the question, we are all, not even children, you see, we are just nothing, absolutely, I should say. Puppets, you may call them at the most, you see. So, he then himself said, this is the reason. The reason is that when a person is angry on another person, the anger arises from his mind, no doubt. It's the mind that plays the trick. But then what happens, that it is as if he is away from his heart. And the more he gets angry on the person, the more distant he is from the heart. He is more removed away from the heart, you see. So that's why the person, when he's angry, shouts at the person in the beginning. And in his shouting, you see, he gets more and more angry, more and more far removed from his heart, and more shouting, and louder the tone of the shouting and so forth. So that's the reason why people shout, because the person, you see, on whom the person has got angry is removed further away from his heart. Baba says, you won't be able to follow this properly. So let us take another example, he said. He says, you know, when people are fond of each other, two people are fond of each other, what happens? See, they talk, and they talk, and say, take the instance of a man and a woman, you see, they're fond of each other, they talk, and their talks are reduced to whispers when they fall in love with each other, and they are all by themselves, you see, they whisper. And they, because they come, they are so close to their heart, to each other's hearts, you see. So the distance is now almost nil. So there comes a time when even they stop whispering and they just look at one another, you see. And there's no need for any speech. Let no sound whatsoever, and no speech at all. There's no need for it. Because of the closeness to the heart. So that's how Baba said about why people shout when people are angry. And why people just have nothing to say, but they somehow or other understand each other more explicitly without exchanging a single word, you see. And maybe because Baba is our own self, he is closer to us than our own self, that he observed silence and had no need for his speech, you see. And therefore he observed silence. Maybe, who knows? One of the reasons for his observing silence, that there was no need for speech. He is so close to us, so one of us. How can I tell about the feeling of the Mandali at this juncture, you see? I can speak about myself, but not of the Mandali. Yes. My feelings are... just the days roll by, see, they pass by. I just know one thing, that what I have to do is just do whatever would please Baba, if Baba were with us in our physical, in his physical form, you see. What he would want us to do, want me to do. And I just use that as the gauge and do my duty. Of course, it all appears to be so hollow. It matters very little whatever may happen, you say now, when his physical presence is not here. But we don't miss his presence. Somehow or other we feel his presence. There is no doubt about that. I cannot be, I cannot say that we don't feel his presence. There is a definite feeling of his presence. But his physical presence with which we were so attached or so familiar with, you see, that we miss. And that's why in missing his physical presence everything seems or sounds so hollow, you see. There's no urge for anything except one thing, and that urges us on and on, and that is to just... what, suppose if he were now present, what would he want us to do? How best we could please him? That's what I try to do every day. And I pass my day in just doing that. And somehow or other I've got that common sense, you see, what would please Baba. So I know. It is too presumptuous on my part to say that I know what would please Baba, but now after having lived with him for nearly 35 years, I have a little glimpse, you may call it, into this affair, you see. So I know what Baba would want me to do at this juncture, you see. And Baba would want me to attend to the little correspondence that I do, you see, where people really want to know something about Baba. Definitely, when I get that feeling that, well, it's not just exchange of words, yeah, not havapar, as Baba would say, it means has real substance in it, then I reply, I do that. And then Baba would want me to help the trustees over here in the trust work, so I go there, I do my duty there, taking it to be my duty. He would want me to do this at this juncture. And then here I attend to people when they come. I know that Baba would want his lovers to know more about Baba. So I cannot spare myself. I must do my duty. So I do my duty there. And then, of course, Mehrazada state is there to look after that. Nariman is good enough, Arnavas is good enough to allow us to continue to stay here. So we continue to stay, but while staying over here, we have to not just stay here or live here, but in return must also do our duty in trying to look after the affairs of the estate. So I do that also. And so the days pass by, but everything seems to be and sounds to be very hollow. Just like, well, it's like that. Can't expect anything more from me now. It's that feeling, you see. This is what it is. The best that we can put up. And the best is not a person when he wants to put up, well, wants to be his best, he dresses himself and he cares to look, appear very handsome or clean or tidy or anything. Now, there is no need for all those, you see. This is the best, whatever it is, as I am. That's all. Whether it be in speech and thought and form or dress or anything it is, whether it is external or internal. That's what I mean by everything seems to be hollow. Doesn't matter now. Nothing matters. Nothing matters.
The duty is there.
But duty is there, that's all. It's just, that is the thing that keeps us. Thing that has tied me to this. So it's a terra firma. We would, but there is no context, that's what I say to this. So naturally, Baba would just try to needle somebody, you see, in the beginning. The party is concerned, and then the party, that particular person is already peeved, you see, because of certain incident that must have taken place a couple of days earlier. And he blurts out, you see, he is not in a good temper and all that, so he blurts out, and naturally the person against whom he blurts out is the person who has aggrieved him. So he says things, you see, and then Baba hears the other side, you see, and needles that person, you see, against him, and then there is a row over here in his presence, and then exchange of words and all that, and everything is vomited out, so to say, out of the system. So one day it so happened that we were in Mahabaleshwar, and Kaka, Baidul was in charge of the mad ashram, and Kaka had the duty that he should go out with me and bring the musts, you see. He was the one who was to supply the musts to the mastashram, and Baidul was in charge of the mastashram. Now what happened, one day we had brought a must who had a dysentery, you see. You people call it a dysentery, but we call it a diarrhea. Loose stools every now and then he would pass. So naturally he was given a space there in the ashram, and we who had taken the responsibility of taking him back, you see, in good condition, we were concerned with his sickness, and we told Baidul to take care of him. So Kaka had told Baidul that he passes loose stools, see that his sheets are renewed every now and then, you see, replaced with the old one is washed properly and a new one is put there. So Baidul tried, poor fellow tried to do that, you see, but Kaka was not at all satisfied. Kaka was a hard taskmaster, you see. And he wanted according to his whims and wishes. And it was not possible to supply him every 5 minutes, you see, with a new sheet, you see. So Baidul got so angry with it that he would just neglect Kaka. So Kaka's temper rose, you see, and in the morning it flared up when Baba would take the round. So when Baba was taking the round, Kaka flared up, you see. And that this must is being neglected by Baidul, and that the condition he's in there, see, he has shat there, and the whole bed sheet is dirty, and Baidul doesn't change it. And then Baidul, who had already suffered for nearly 24 hours, he went to his feeling, you see. And Baidul had his dentures, you see. So he started shouting out so loudly and got so angry, you see, with all the good thing that he had done for that must, you see, in the beginning. And it was uncontrollable, and that he waited for doctors to cure him, and then in the meantime he tried to give him all facilities, and Kaka is dissatisfied and all that, and he started telling Baba that, look Baba, I did this, and he started shouting, so the dentures fell off his mouth, you see. So in the process, you see, while he is giving vent to his feelings, he picks up his dentures, shoves them in his mouth, from the earth mind you, shoves them in his mouth again and again starts blurting out, you see, and that was a sight. It must have happened two or three times like that in our presence, and Baba enjoyed it so much that he needled him all the more, you see, to shout out, and waited for one more turn that the dentures may fall down, you see, and he puts it in. And then in no time, Baba, the art master, you see, he in no time just brings all of us together, you see, and we forget. That's the beauty of the mandali, you see. Howsoever much they will flare up against one another or anybody, you see. But in an instant, they just forget about it, completely forget about the whole thing. That's the beauty. And he was the master who made us do that, you see. On our own, it is impossible. Impossible. And we became friends, you see, immediately and all that. And nothing mattered, you see. So such were the incidents that took place. Baba, some of the women, Mandali and I, were once at a place called Vengurla. Baba didn't go there just for having some relaxation or rest at the seashore, but he had some work with the musts there. He had to contact musts. So after our initial contact on the first day, Baba wanted the women to go out swimming. There's a good beach over there. So Baba led the women there to the beach, and I had to also accompany Baba. So the women were shown the place where they can have their swim, and we waited at a distance, and Baba got the whim to go for a swim too. So I enjoyed it after many years. Baba and I had a swim there in the sea, in the ocean, and after the swim, Baba signaled to the women saying that he was leaving for the must contact and that they should not delay much but return back to the rest house where they were staying. So on our way to the must, Baba got a plan and said that instead of going round about, which was about 3 miles walking distance, why can't we cross the sea, you see? There is, I don't know what you all call, here in India we call the backwaters, where you see when there is no tide, when there's an ebb, all the portion that is vacant of the water, sea water, stinks like anything. What do you call that in the States? You have no idea. Right. Well, we here call that, you see. So, Baba's, but there always remains a pool of water, which is very deep too. It's a sea, by the way, it's a sea. So, but then, you see, all the sewages and everything just enters the sea, that portion, and then when there's an ebb, it all starts stinking. It's nothing but slush. Sometimes it is waist deep, sometimes it is 10 feet, sometimes 20, sometimes 50 feet, depending upon the shore. So this was quite deep, nearly 30, 40 feet deep. But there were boys playing there, you see, and the fishermen there. The fishermen had finished their daily chore by that time, and they must have gone to sell the fish. The boys were playing with the canoes that they had prepared of the tree trunks. Baba thought that if we could cross the sea, which was just a distance of about, say, 400 to 500 yards, it will be easy. We can cross to the place where the must was in no time, instead of walking distance of 3.5 miles. I tried to tell Baba that it was no use taking this risk. It was very risky because we can never depend upon the boys, and especially with that contraption they had had, see, of a trunk of a tree carved out into a sort of a canoe, you see. It was very dangerous. So, but Baba insisted on going that way. And I had Baba's clothes and everything of the sort. And special satchel which contained Baba's board and napkin and things for the musts and all that. But Baba insisted, so there was no other go. Baba told me to tell the boy, arrange it with the boys, you see. So I called the boys and told them that I am prepared to give a good tip if they can carry both of us across this dirty, stinking surface of water, you see, and drop us there at the other end. So they were very happy, very enthusiastic. And the way they became enthusiastic, I was terrified, you see. Because with the boys, you see, nothing is certain. They don't take anything seriously. And especially these fisher folk, they're all the time in the water. They don't mind being just in the water. And they don't realize what it is for us, you see, to be drenched. Well, it was all arranged. They brought a good canoe, you see, for us, for Baba and myself. And it was very difficult to balance it. And I told the boys that nobody should sit inside and they should just push the canoe very neatly to the other side. And they were trying to do that. In the meantime, half a dozen other boys, you see, from other canoes, they thought it was a wonderful sight to see these two people dressed up and all that sitting in the canoe. They came and tried to tease the other boys. So the boys who were carrying us across, they were serious and they took us seriously. But the other boys distracted them, and it so happened in a moment's time, you see, the whole thing turned topsy-turvy and we were right inside the ocean there, in that deep slush. We were just going down and down. And of course we knew to swim and all that, so I just caught hold of Baba's arm, you see, I could get hold of Baba's arm under that. We couldn't see also, it was so dirty underwater. And then we both got out, swam the distance, you see, and we were full of dirt, nothing but dripping. I don't know how we managed to breathe also in that short time, and it was stinking like anything. So Baba told me to go back home as soon as possible, that the women should not know about it, otherwise they will not like the idea, you see. And that more because Baba cared for me, the women might admonish me for such a bold step, you see, to take Baba like that. So naturally it was my duty not to reveal to them that Baba insisted. So I went there and got a spare clothes for Baba. I arranged for buckets of water there. I took Baba behind a hut and he just washed his hair and face and all that and the body. And then he put on new. I was in my old dirty dress. I had no time for all this. Then Baba and I walked, you see. I looked like a ghost in that dirty clothes of mine, walking through the street with Baba. And then he contacted the mast. And while we returned, Baba was so happy with the contact. He says, well, today we had a very interesting experience. And says, you remember how you lent your arm and brought me out of the slush? I said, yes, Baba, fortunately I could get hold of your arm and pick you up, give a lift, that's all. He says, I will also do the same thing when the time comes for you, to pick you out of slush, the worldly slush. And that was a great day for me to get this assurance of the God-man. So that's the story. On 1st of August 1938 when we came, we didn't go to Mehrabad because Mehrabad was under construction. You remember, you must have noticed the tower there that says August 1938
yeah.
At Mehrabad. It did get completed in August, but it was not on the 1st of August. We were called on 1st of August 1938.
Which is about a month that.
Yeah, so we spent a month here, you see. There's a bungalow in between Mehrazad and Mehrabad. There is that bungalow called the irrigation bungalow. Now it's called the rest house. A huge property, you see. So behind that, Baba and we all lived. Sarosh and Adi and Adi's brother and father and all that. It's a government bungalow meant for first-class gazetted officers, you see, to stay in. Office bungalow, yes, it is. Still now there is an office. Yeah. So we were staying there. We never went to our... Mother never went to her ancestral home, you see, parents' place. We went to Baba and we were made to stay there. So then when the place was ready to receive the people there, Baba then took us there to Mehrabad with him. And the women, that means my two sisters and mother, stayed with the women up the hill, and my father and myself and Mehrwan, my youngest my brother, we stayed down the hill, you know, in that room where it is now, that cabin which has the cross and the crescent and all that.
Yeah.
That was given to us first. Yeah. So we stayed in that room. Three of us stayed in that room. And that room was used as a meeting place when in the morning we had to roll up everything, you see, and clear, make it tidy, and Baba would come and sit there. So that's how we stayed there. Then my father was told to go back to Nagpur. And he was told not to resign, then he was told to take long leave, preparatory to retirement, premature retirement. There were two more years, you see, for him to retire. So then my father was sent back by Baba, says, no, you should continue. Now that you have come to me, I order you now. You will be working for me now. So go back and resume your service. And poor fellow, you see, the old man, having lost the whole estate, he had to find a little cottage and stay there. And then I was sent back to find a cottage for him and house him there. And then to make him stay there, he stayed there all alone for a long period. He joined service. He resumed his services there. And, he did his job there. And then when he retired, he came to Baba. And we were in Bangalore when he retired. He came to Baba and then he served and he was there. And then how is it that my mother is now in Pune? You might ask that, isn't it? So it's not only Pune. You see, you have no idea. It's so simple when people say that, well, the God-man has told a certain family, leave all and follow me. It's so simple. It is simple, there's no doubt, provided you don't put the question why and what. And therefore, this life has become so simple because we never put that question why and why, wherefore. So when we came to him, then it so happened that he took us on, my father was sent back to Nagpur for 2 years. Baba started this blue bus trip, you see, in 1938-39, and we went on a tour. I was driving this blue bus, Elizabeth drove, Donkin drove and all that. Donkin came in 1939, by the way, later on. So, I was in charge. So 1 year we roamed about in this car. There, Baba said, what you should do is, when we went to Jabalpur, Baba said, what you do now, tells my mother and my sisters and my brother. My father was housed in Nagpur. My mother and my sisters were dropped at Baba Lover's place. He says, you stay here and see that Mehrwan gets education. He is put in a school. He was in a school, his school was disrupted, schooling was disrupted, he was put in another school. So my mother and my sisters now have to establish another house and they are made to stay there and my brother gets an education there.
In Jabalpur.
And I come with Baba now. I am with Baba all alone. I roam about with Baba, wander about with Baba. And my father writes to me, says, I am all alone here. And then he writes, and my mother comforts my father, saying that you are not all alone, we are just doing what Baba wants us to do. And then I pacify and comfort both of them, saying that, well, it's all that. And then again my mother and my brother and sister again are taken by Baba, you see. And again we go out on a tour, you see. And on a long tour, and Baba calls them to Mehrabad, and then again on a tour. And my father comes during holidays. And then we tour, and then we go to Dehradun, you see, North India. And then Baba tells us, that is my mother and us means the family, says that this is a good place for Mehrwan to have education. So I find a house there in Dehradun, you see, and get established there, you see, there. And then he studies there in the school there for some months. He says, no, I think it is better that you all again wind up the house, you see, and come to me with Mehrabad. So we go again to Mehrabad, you see. And then again Baba wants to go out, so we all again go out. And then eventually it so happens that Baba says now he is going to establish his center in Bangalore. You know, you have heard of that Universal Spiritual Center? A huge property was bought and selected by Norina and Nadine and all that. And so my father retires, and it's a long story, you see. A huge property, 500 acres, you see. So that's another chapter in Baba's life, you see, a ministry, that Universal Spiritual Center. So you ask Adi in Adi's office, you see, he has got so many sketches of the whole process, you see, of the whole thing. Well, so we went to Bangalore. Baba says, now we are winding up all from Mehrabad and we go to Bangalore. So we go to Bangalore. In the process, it's now time for my father to retire. So my father is given charge, you see, of the construction work of the center along with other engineer Baba lover. Arnavaz and Nariman's uncle. Arnavaz's father was an engineer, civil engineer, by the way. There was another civil engineer, a Baba disciple by name Kale Mama. And my father was an mechanical and electrical engineer. So all this put together, you see, they were given the different charges and all that. And the whole of Bangalore was invited for the, what do you call that? The foundation ceremony and all that. You see, oh, it's a big affair, you see. And then after that work started, and we stayed, Baba and the women stayed in the bungalow called the Lynx, and we stayed in Four Palace bungalow and all that. And Baba established that little mast ashram there in the Lynx itself, you see. And I don't know whether you remember the story I told you about my prestige, how we were staying in the Lynx, a very posh locality, you see. And I was in charge of the mast ashram, so in the beginning I used to drive Baba in car, a good car. Elizabeth's car was there, the Ford new car and all that. So sometimes I would be always with Baba, you see. My mother and my sisters and all were with Baba at the time. My father was also with Baba. Everything was happy and rosy now. And I used to drive the car, drive Baba and all that to and fro. And there, in front of us, we were staying on Palace Road, you see, near the palace of Maharaja of Mysore. It belonged to the brother of the Maharaja of Mysore, that bungalow. So as soon as we get out of the, opposite us was a huge place, bungalow, of a chromium mine magnetist. You know, chromium mines are there, and a very wealthy person. So he had two guards on one gate, two guards on either post, you see, guarding the whole property with gun and all. So they would at once come, get up and salute me, you see, as soon as I get out in car or drive Baba in or alone or anything like that. So, well, I felt very happy about it and proud that, well, my status is still maintained, although I have left the world, you see. So this came into my mind one day. And then soon after that, Baba established the mast ashram in Bangalore. Wayfarers is full of our tours, you see, and filling in the mast ashram, going south, bringing Chetty Baba and Fulwala and all that. The high type of musts were brought there, you see, our tours in the south. So one day when I was in charge of the place, you see, Baba told me that now there are lots of inmates and the latrine cans, the old type, you see, we had to draw out the dishes, so to say, and empty them and put them back when the dishes are full. So what happened? Baba one day told me that there are so many inmates and these boxes are not enough, you see. You should immediately get some more, a couple of them more, you see. I said, it will take some time. I said, no time, no question now. You go and get it. What I thought immediately was, immediately means immediately. Now my mother had taught me all those things and I was just a newcomer, you see. And I said, well, we must obey the master. So I jumped the wall of that building, you see, and then I crossed the road and ran into Fort Palace Road. It took only 2 minutes for me to do that, instead of my going all the way in a car and all that. Why should I take the car? And I went to our quarters, servants' quarters there. They had surplus tins, you see. They were all dripping with shit, you see. I drew them both together and brought them. As soon as I went inside the compound, the man got up and saluted me, you see. Although I was on foot, the guards. When I came out of the compound with the two dripping tins of shit, you see, like that. So they wanted to get up, but when they saw it, they just sat down and looked at each other. I could notice that, you see. I said, that's the thing, you see. What makes you get up? Not the man. Nothing of the sort, you see. When you see this, the man is no more there, you see. So, you see how, what's all this, you see? It's just a farce, that's what I felt. That was the first lesson I got, you see. So I didn't mind that. I just ran the distance, ran across the road, jumped over the wall, and there, the two tins are there. Baba was so happy. How did you manage it? He asked me. I said, well, I went there and jumped over the wall and got it. You wanted it immediately, it's there. So that's how we had to serve Baba, you see, like that. And it went on and on and on. Then Baba said, now it's time that Baba wanted to leave Bangalore, you see, and go away from there. So what about the mere spiritual center and all that? It so happened the war got declared, you see, the First World War, and the military acquired the whole area. Military pounced upon the area, you see, because it was there, it was near a big lake and all that, and they gave us a handsome rent for it, compensation was there. And Baba said, all right, now we can't go against the military, it was wartime. So what happened was that was a good excuse for Baba to leave Bangalore. And we got back to Mehrabad again. So before leaving, Baba said, why not select a place over here for Mehrwan and others, you see. And then in the meantime, Baidul's daughter came. She also, Baidul brought his family from Iran then. So his daughter was also to be put in school and all. So Mehrwan, Sarwar, and Mehru's sister was now ripe for change in school and all that. Mehru has another sister. She's a doctor now. She's in Africa. Baidul's daughter is now married to a very well-known person in Bombay. She's there. So what happened is that all of the three children will go to school, and my mother can look after them, and my sisters are there. So why not have a house? So Baba and I went out in search of... Baba, the godman, goes out in Bangalore in search of a house where he can house my family. So we go out and find a good place where Baba liked it, and there is the opening ceremony and all that, and Baba put them there, and then we left again. You see, leaving all and following him means so many things. Now you have asked me this question, then the whole life comes in. So then we go. I again go to Baba, to Mehrabad. Then Baba tells me to bring all the musts from there. So we reserve compartments and bring the musts there to Mehrabad. The whole complement is going there now to Mehrabad. On the hill where Kekobad lives now, you have seen the Kekobad quarters. Formerly it was a maternity hospital there, you see, and there are little structures, temples, they are all demolished. So this place now, where Kekobad lives as it is, was converted into the must quarters for the high must, like Chetty Baba, Fulwala, from Calcutta, Karim Baba and all that. And from Hussain, there was that dancing must, you see, all the time he would dance. So I forget the names also. So I became the man in charge of this place now. And I continued, my mother and my sisters are there. And my father is in Bangalore trying to wind up the whole thing, you see. Now he has to sell the property to the people, you see. They make into plots and sell the whole property. And many things happened like that. And then we continued. Then it so happened that the war broke out and war flared up. And Adi's office was also in Bangalore. Adi didn't want to come back. Adi said, now what's the sense of coming back? Meher Baba journal is being run, it's being published from there. We have given the addresses and it's going on. You know that Meher Baba journal was... It has, yeah. So Adi said, no, he had his office at... which place is that? It's called some place. So he had his office. So... Well, Baba said, all right, you stay here and Gayamaya, means my mother's children, will be here also. So they continued to stay there. But war broke out, and it so happened that Japan started bombarding the coasts, the southern coasts, you see, of India. So Adi said that now they were coming closer and closer to India. So he sent a wire to her. We were, my mother and my brother and sisters, they were happy because they didn't care where they stayed, provided they were under Baba's orders, that's all. So in reply, Baba sent a cable saying that, come immediately, return to Mehrabad. So again, I was sent back for dismantling the whole show, you see. It's just like changing the scenes, you see, of the in the drama. So I went there and wound up the whole show, you see, and arranged to bring them back. That's how we brought. Then as soon as my mother came here, my Baba's mother fell in love with my mother. So says, Nero, I am now very old. And then my father said, one day said, Baba, what is this all the time shifting these poor, my father called us sheep. He said, what is this? This flock of sheep is being shunted from one place to another, you see, all the time disrupting the education of little Mehrwan and all that. And when will they feel settled anywhere? Baba says, everything will be perfect for them, no worry, nothing. In the meantime, my father said that it would be best if this were to settle in Pune. It's a nice place, it's a central place. For him to say this and Baba's mother to fall in love with my mother's company, you see, it happened, you see. And my Baba said that Baba's mother insisted that my mother should be there in Pune with her, because she is now getting old and there's nobody to look after her, and I like Gai. Gai means my mother's name is Gai. So I want her company. So Baba then called us aside from my father, says, look here, we'll have to play some trick, you see. These old people, what I want you to do is you go to Pune. Don't unpack things. I will send the whole thing, you see, the luggage in a truck, small van. You go there. And there is a house that is now, Behram searched for a house, you know, Baba's brother. He searched for, which is now Bindra house, that house, same house where they. So just for 15 days be there and I will call you back. Just for the fancy of my mother, you see, just pacify her, comfort her, it's for her. And don't unpack the luggage, keep it packed there. Now look at the Godman, how tricky he is, like Krishna, you see. He tells my father that now, on the other hand, you see, he tells my father, now, see, my mother wants Guy to be there. And what, I have sent Guy there, and my mother is not going to last for long. And even if she were to last for long, her fancy won't last for long. So what happens is, you wanted Pune, so your wife and children will be in Pune now. Now, what you should do is make them comfortable, see that they are comfortable there. So he sends my father also with me and my mother and my sister and brother. So we are all together now in the house. Now I have been given strict instructions not to unpack things, you see. So we used to sleep on the floor, we used not to unpack things, you see, and call for food from somewhere, or make some little thing, you see, unpack all the things we shouldn't, just the things that are necessary. And my mother would be whole day with my Baba's mother and all that. And within 15 days, in the meantime, it so happened that one of the Zoroastrian community person died there. And my father, when there is a funeral, there is a special dress to be worn by Zoroastrian. So my father shouted at me, said, what the hell are you doing? Why don't you unpack? I want a dress now for that occasion, you see. I can't go in this European style dress, you see. We must have a community dress for that. I said, Father, there's no hurry to unpack. I'm so tired, you know. And in the meantime, Baba's mother, of course, somehow or other, my father managed to go there, you see. But in the meantime, within 15 days of our stay there, I think, Baba's mother died, and the whole thing. Then Baba came, you see. I was at Mahabaleshwar, we were at Mahabaleshwar, then I drove Baba. Baba wanted to attend. So Baba was brought there. And to the same house where Behram and Parin live now. Mother died there. So we were there for a day, just for an hour or half an hour there. Baba didn't attend the funeral or anything of the sort. Then what happened? That Baba came back, and then now my mother said, Baba, now what's the sense? Tell us what to do now, whether we should unpack and continue to stay there or come there. Mother is no more now. So Baba says, you continue to stay there. This is how we are staying there. And Bindra House became the central station. Every time Baba would be going there and coming and all that. It never once we felt that we were away from Baba or anything of the sort. It continued like that, you see. It became more or less a sort of Mehrabad or Mehrazad for the people. And they know how they used to go there, and sometimes 40 people would stay there, you see, at a time. And we should have, we had music concerts and this and that. Oh, terrible, we had to pitch tents there in that small compound and all sorts of things, you see. So we stayed there, and they are continuing to stay there, that's all. My father died there then.
Who did your father take Baba to be? Did your father take Baba to be
the... In later years, yes, he took him to be the avatar, the God-man. In the beginning also, but he had greater, he was an orthodox Zoroastrian. So he had believed, so my father was made clear in his mind by Baba saying that you may take me to be a stone, and Zoroaster, you are Zoroaster as the prophet. Whatever you bestow on Zoroaster would reach me because I am the one. So that was, everything was settled, you see. So this is one part of the story. To follow him means not to follow him in the sense that, well, you have come, left the whole world and want to come to him because Baba has asked you to come, and you take pride in your, in telling others that, well, we had to come to Baba because Baba wanted us to follow him, leave all and follow him. But that didn't mean that we had to follow him in the sense that we followed ahead of him and he had to follow us in our footsteps. No, we had to be behind him, carry out all what he wanted us to do. Follow him did not mean that we had to just walk behind him, but carry out his behests, orders, commands. He may put us in a deserted place, you see, or our place may be in Timbuktu somewhere, you see. That also tantamounts to following him, as long as we follow his orders. Aren't you all following him if you obey his orders? He asks you all to do this and do that, and not to do this and not to do that. You are following him too. Following him does not, leave all and follow means what? It's not that you should leave all and just be with him by his side, holding his skirt. No. You may be wherever you are placed by him. If you obey him, if you do just the things that would please him, you are as much following him as any other who has lived with him is. There's no doubt about that. Because you know, from my example, what it means to follow him, where we were thrown, you see, away from him. And so many times, any human patience would get exhausted, you see. But because he had held our hand, that is the thing. If we had gone there to hold his hand, and if he had placed us in this position, there was a chance, you see, of his having slipped from our grip. But when he has hold of our hand, that's all. We are quite safe. That's the difference. And it's a world of difference. Now this is confronting me in such a way that I feel as if I'm behind the bars, you see.
Did Baba ever explain, did he ever give any examples or explain at all what the meaning of holding on to his dhamma was?
Oh yes. Several times, you see. And the beautiful explanation that he has given is, what Baba meant and means for us all is that we should take him to be our comforter, our guide, our all in all, God in human form. And we are his creatures. What he wants us to do is to completely depend on him. If we depend on him, say, 75%, and we hold on to ourselves 25%, that's not depending on him. All what he wants us to depend on him completely, and the figure that he has given for it is holding on to his dhamma. Means just like a child holds on to the skirt of his mother. When a child is taken to a, say, fair, you see, a baby,